Now, it's a pleasure to be here with the Christians in Saskatoon. And on their behalf, I extend a warm welcome again to all who have come this morning. If you didn't get an outline on your way in, then maybe raise your hand or something, and one of the brothers from the assembly here can get you one. For those who weren't here last night, we gave a brief introduction to the messages that I plan to take up at the conference meetings today and tomorrow during the portions that I'm responsible for speaking. The general theme that we're going to cover is the theme of stewardship. And stewardship involves, I can't run over all that we went over last night. There are outlines from last night's meeting as well at the back. You can pick one up and go through the scriptures at your own time. But I just want to say an introduction. Stewardship involves three or four elements. Stewardship always relates to something that doesn't belong to me. Stewardship always involves responsibility for this thing that doesn't belong to me. It's not something I can neglect or ignore or have nothing to do with. I've been given something that doesn't belong to me, but I've been given responsibility to care for it and to use it. Stewardship always involves a limited time during which I discharge that responsibility. And stewardship always involves accountability, being held to account for the manner in which I discharge my responsibility for this thing that didn't belong to me, but I was trusted with. So we're going to look today and tomorrow at a number of specific, very, very practical areas in our lives where this principle of stewardship applies scripturally. We're going to start off this morning by looking at our stewardship of our time. And the first thing I should say is I need to be done by 20 after. My wife's last words as she dropped me at the airport were, make sure you don't go over time. So since I'm speaking about time, I better be true to that. So I will be done at 20 after and split the time evenly with my brother this morning. So there's a number of scriptures I want to read. We'll start off in Genesis chapter 1. We'll read through these quite quickly, and then we will make reference to them as we begin. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1. Genesis 1 and verse 1. Interesting that our Bible begins with a reference to time, a measure or a description of a point in time. Genesis 1 and 1, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Verse 5, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. Down to verse 8, the end of the verse. And the evening and the morning were the second day. Verse 13, and the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Now we'll leave Genesis 1. We'll turn over to the Psalms, the book of Psalms. And we'll just pick up a verse or two in Psalm 39. Psalm 39 and verse 4. David is the one writing this psalm. David says in verse 4 of Psalm 39, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Or another translation of that is that I may know what time I have here. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Selah. Over to the New Testament, please, to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15. Ephesians 5 and 15, see then that ye walk circumspectly, that means carefully or thoughtfully. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. The English Standard Version translates these two verses, see then, or watch then how carefully you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. The little book of James, chapter 4. James chapter 4, verse 14. James 4 and 14, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? We often preach this in the gospel. Very, very, very applicable to us as God's people. What is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that, he ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. And finally, please, just a couple of verses in 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 1. 1 Peter 4 and verse 1, for as much then as Christ hath suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of God. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. Now that's all the verses we'll read. I'll refer to some others as we're going through. And I will have to move quickly. A lot of this material could probably be explained a little more fully than I'm going to take the time to do today. But hopefully, it's my prayer that it will provoke thought, especially in the minds of those that are young. I am very burdened that this is an area where the devil has very subtly but very successfully made tremendous inroads into Christian living. He has created a Western cultural lifestyle that is diabolically designed to suffocate vitality for living for God. Where what we consider to be the legitimate demands of everyday life are so overwhelming that we find we're like hamsters on a wheel, running as fast as we can, never seeming to have enough time to do what needs done, and somehow the weeks and the months and the years just fly by, and lost in most of it is any sense of the purposes of God, the direction of God, the things of God, and before you know it, a life is gone. So I don't think that's accidental. I think it's really important for us to step back and realize that is deliberate. That is the devil's plan. And if he can just occupy us so that time is consumed, he will succeed in keeping us from God's purpose in our life. So the first thing I want to talk about today is the design of time. As we read in Genesis chapter 1, I tried to stress there in the reading, you can't read through those first two chapters of Genesis without realizing that time is an integral part of the universe that God created. We talk about a time-space-matter universe. We're part of it. We live in this creation of God's, and he has put these dimensions, these realities, woven right into the foundation of what came from his hand, so that we understand matter, we relate to matter, we understand that we are physical, literal, material things, and we live in a literal world with a literal surrounding in a universe. We grasp that. We can conceive of that. We understand that there's space and we move through it, and we understand that there is time. So time, space, and matter are the basic building blocks that God put into this creation when it came from his hand. God designed lights. God designed the separation of light from darkness. And right at the very beginning when he did it, God said that this was going to be for its times and seasons and days and months and years. Now, why is that important? Well, the point I want to make is this. We talk about time management. And for those of you who are in school, if you've taken any sort of organizational theory course, I took business in university and was exposed to all of those sorts of things. So any management theory, organizational theory, almost any field, they make a big deal about time management. I want you to stop for a moment and think about that term, time management. We actually don't manage time. God manages time. And in its design, time is perfect. So our challenge is not managing time. Our responsibility is not to manage time. God manages time, and it's a good thing He does. Imagine if it was left to the United Nations or a committee of the United Nations to manage time. They'd make an awful blunder and a mess of it. But God put His universe into motion. He set everything up like we would call it clockwork now. And He manages time. Always has. Always will. And He's never out of control. He's never had to adjust His atomic clock. He's never had to put an extra day into the year to somehow make it work. God established time. God designed time. God manages time. Our challenge is to manage ourselves in the way in which we utilize the time that God entrusts to us. We blame time for a lot of our own inadequacies. Right? So we'll say things like, there just aren't enough hours in the day. Really? God put the number of hours that are in every day. And He put in exactly enough. There's no problem with the way time was designed. So we can't really say things like, there's not enough hours in the day. Or we make statements like, so-and-so has a lot more time than I do. No, they don't. They have exactly 24 hours in every day, and so do you, and so do I. Nobody has more time than anybody else has. We talk about time flying. Time flies when you're having fun. No, time moves at exactly the same pace, all the time. Every day, every moment, every minute, every hour, every day, it just plods along perfectly, exactly as it came from the hand of God. We blame it for most of our own inadequacies. But it's important that we step back and understand that in its design, time has come from God. And it is perfectly designed exactly as He intended it to be. One of the men I heard speak on this subject once, quite a number of years ago now, and it made a real impact on me, was David Gilliland from Northern Ireland. And David made a statement, and I wrote it down at the time. I think it was at Easter Conference in Toronto. I wrote it down at the time and carried it around with me for quite a while. David said this, and I was feeling at that particular conference, as I have often felt in my life, overwhelmed, struggling, missing a lot of important things, wondering where all the hours in every day went and why couldn't I get done the things I needed to get done. This is the statement David Gilliland made. He said, every one of us has exactly enough time to do exactly what God intends us to do. That's really the point I want to make with the design of time. Every one of us has exactly enough time to do exactly what God intends us to do. So if there's someone here today and you're a student or you're a mother with young children or you're a father working to support a family or you're a grandparent with grandchildren that make you pull your hair out or whatever stage you're at in life, if there's someone here today and you feel that as you look at your life, it just seems that the priorities are never getting done and you're running as fast as you can and you can't keep up, remember, if I am not getting done in my life the things that in the quiet presence of God I know are the things I should be getting done, the problem is that I am filling my time with a lot of things that God never intended me to fill my time with. That really is our big challenge. We have exactly enough time to do exactly what God intends us to do. And therefore, if things that God intends me to do are not getting done, the problem is there's other things that are taking the time that God intended me to invest in those things. Now, I'm not up here pretending to be a shining example of this. These things search my heart and my life as much as anyone else's. But we do have to recognize what the Word of God teaches. We must not blame our weaknesses and our inadequacies somehow on time, because time in its design is perfect. Secondly, I want to talk about the danger relative to this subject of time. The Bible is actually very clear in warning us, centuries before any of us were born, the Bible is very clear in warning us that when it comes to time, there is one very specific danger. And that is that time is fleeting. Time is passing by quickly. And the danger is that we'll squander it. The danger is that we will fail to use it the way God intended us to use it. That's really the thought David had in Psalm 39 where we read, Lord, make me to know my end and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. In James we read, what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for, think of these three words, appears for a little time. What is your life? I was speaking to Mr. Bergsman in the home this morning. He's 85 years old. I'm 47 years old. Whether it's 47 or 85 or 95, in the grand scheme of God's purposes, what is your life? James sums it up by saying it is a little time. That's what a life is. A life is the accumulation of little building blocks of time. And when you put a boundary around the beginning and the end and you sum the whole thing up, in the light of eternity, a life is a little time. Now that doesn't mean it's insignificant. What it means is it's incredibly significant.
Due to technical difficulties, there are several minutes missing from this ministry message.
Rises to a new day, that day is gone forever. It's not renewable. In economic terms, thirdly, time is a perishable resource. And that basically means you can't hoard it. Remember the manna? When God provided manna for people, they couldn't gather it up. They couldn't gather a week's supply and then not. No, it was perishable. You had to use it when it was given, and you couldn't hang on to it to use some other time. That's what time's like. One of the great traps for young Christians is somehow thinking that someday I'm going to be something for God. Once I finish university, I'll have a lot more time and then I'll be able to pour my life into the things of God. Then you finish university and you get a job and you're busier than ever. Then you get a wife and it's the worst step of all. No, the busiest step of all. And then maybe the Lord trusts you with children and things get busier and busier. And we fall into this trap that thinking out there ahead of us, there's this next plateau we're going to reach. Then we'll have time that we'll be able to devote to the things of God. God wants you to live today for Him. And He will hold you responsible for what you do with the hours He trusts you with today. And if you're spared till tomorrow when the sun rises again tomorrow, He gives you another day. And He holds you accountable for how you use that day. That really is the danger with time, is that we lose sight of that. We are masters at squandering time. And as I started out by saying, that's no accident. It's not just sort of the way it is. That's deliberate. Have you ever stopped to think that our generation, 2011, we have more what are called time-saving devices than any generation that ever lived before us? And I know I just said you can't save time, but you know what I mean, the way I'm using it. Right? I don't think there's anybody here that spent 3 hours this morning out in a cold river washing the laundry. Right? Our foreparents did. Don't have to go back that many generations until that's exactly how they washed their clothes. Very few people, it seems now, actually spend a long time washing their dishes because we've got dishwashers. Preparing meals, you can pop it in the microwave or just go through the drive-thru. You don't even have to turn your car off. We're a generation that has come up with myriads of ways where technology helps us to be more what we call productive. And we can do so much more in such less time. Why is it that we're a generation then that seems to be more stressed out over time than any generation before us? There's probably no one here that thinks they've got lots of time, they've got lots of freedom, they're no problem doing all the things that need done. They're totally on top of everything they think they should be doing. Hardly anyone feels that way. Why do we as a generation feel so pressured with time when we have more technology than any other generation to do things more quickly? I think if you stop to think about it, you'll realize that technology is a double-edged sword. Because the same technology that has come along and enabled us to do more in shorter time than our foreparents did has introduced into our lifestyles incredibly efficient ways of wasting time. And this is not intended as an intergenerational rant. I'm not up here as a 47-year-old throwing stones at people who are 20 years younger than me and telling you that your generation is all messed up and you should be the way we were. That's not at all what this is intended as. But I do want you to stop to think about activities in our lives that consume tremendous amounts of time. And remember that time is the precious substance from which a life is built. There's a lot of activities that in themselves may not necessarily be bad or evil. They may seem to be relatively harmless. Perhaps their greatest danger is simply in their consumption of time. Think about technology, information technology. I have four children. I'm alarmed at how much time they spend on computers or iPods or iPads or Facebook or chatting or texting. And again, I'm not finding fault with that. I'm not telling you to roll the clock back 50 years and don't use technology. What I am asking you to do is take stock of your time. Do you need to spend 2 hours of every day simply being connected to a million people out there who are bombarding you with useless, trivial information, and you in turn are broadcasting that same useless, trivial information back out to them? What you had for lunch and what you wore today and what you watched last night and where you're going tomorrow. And do you ever think it might be possible to survive and maybe even thrive without all of that constant stimulation? Technology is a huge thief of time. Sports. Spectator sports. Now, I like sports. I really do. And I have two sons, an 18-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they like sports. But I'll tell you something that really searched my own heart when I was in my 20s. You basically commit to spending about 3 hours to every sports game you choose to watch, whether it's live or on television, or streamed online or whatever. 3 hours, basically, you're blocking out and you're committing to watching that sports team. I'm not condemning sports blanketly. I'm just saying, big consumer of time. Golf. Now, I happen not to be a golfer, but I know many who are. Great way for a father and a son to go spend time together. I'm not up here throwing stones at specific activities. I'm only asking you to think about activities that consume time. And if you feel that you're so busy that things that are important are not getting done, look at the way that you are investing your time. Internet browsing. And I'm not talking about going to places we shouldn't go on the internet, pornography and things that are bad. And I'm not even talking about that. And I'm not talking just to young people. I'm talking to people my own age. We're the first generation, really, in Christian living that somehow seems to think that it's a good thing to spend 3 hours some evening just reading junk on the internet. First thing we get up in the morning, you gotta have Fox News on and read spend 45 minutes catching up on what's happening in the world. And then you click on a link and it takes you somewhere else. And then you click on that link and it takes you somewhere else. And you click on two more links. And before you know it, your wife's calling you and you've spent 2 hours doing it. The point I want to make is this. Decisions are being made in the way we allocate our time, and we are not taking charge of those decisions. We are simply like pinballs in a pinball machine, bouncing around, reacting to circumstances, and feeling totally stressed out, and there's not enough time to do what we think we should be doing. And that's really the verse that we read in Ephesians chapter 5, and I want to get to that in a moment. That we need to deliberately live carefully to make the best use of our time. I would challenge you that if you're willing to take up the challenge, I want you to think about the way you spend your time. I want to talk very briefly about the division of time. And let me stress, as I've tried to do, it is no accident that we live in a world where time seems to be so scarce. It's not scarce, but you know what I mean. It's no accident that we have these lives. And I'm not saying that, there's boogeymen in every closet and it's all one big evil empire, but I am reminding us that it is. There is a God of this age. There is one who deliberately pulls the strings of society. There is one who molds and shapes and carefully orchestrates the culture in which we live, so that what we consider to be normal lifestyle, it is designed by him. And it's deliberately designed to chew up these precious resources of time so that our lives are squandered. So I want to talk to you about a division of time. Now, of course, we know that time is divided in many ways, in seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks and years and so on. But there's one specific division of time I want to draw your attention to. If your Bible is still open in 1 Peter chapter 4, where we finished reading, Peter uses two little descriptive clauses there to describe time. He says, first of all, the time past of our life. The time past of our life may suffice. And then he talks about a way that the time past of our life perhaps has been lived. But then in the beginning of the chapter, he talks about living the rest of his time. Should no longer live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of God. I want you to think very seriously this morning about that particular division of time. The time past of our life and the rest of our time. And the point I want to make is this. Every one of us today, we stand right at the intersection between those two expanses of time. My life. My life began, I was born in January the 2nd, 1964, conceived obviously 9 months before that. I don't know when my life is going to end. But what I do know is this, that I am standing in front of you today, right at this critical junction that Peter's describing. I am standing at the intersection between the time past of my life and the rest of my time. And that's exactly where you are in your life as well. There is absolutely nothing that we can do about the time past of our life, other than hopefully learn from its mistakes. But every one of us has a clean slate when it comes to the rest of our time. The sun rises tomorrow morning and we enjoy good health to face another day. Every one of us is given by a gracious God a clean slate for the rest of our time. Paul describes exactly the same concept in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He says, the love of Christ constraineth us because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. And that he died for all, this is the point, that he died for all that they which live should not henceforth. That's exactly the same intersection or point that Peter describes. They should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him that died for them and rose again. Henceforth means from this point forwards. I can't change the past, but with God's help, I can change the future. Henceforth, from this point forward, not to live unto themselves, but unto him that died for them and rose again. So I want to finish in the last 8 or 9 minutes talking about decisions about time. If you're sitting here today and any of this has resonated with you and you're beginning to understand that life is in fact just rolling along and you're hectically, frantically trying to keep up with everything and you wish you knew how to be a better steward of the time that God entrusts to you, I would like to encourage you, not discourage you. I'd like to encourage you that there are decisions we need to make about our time that with God's help can enable us to use it wisely for him. That's exactly what we read in Ephesians chapter 5. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. I love the ESV translation of that verse. I quoted it. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. I think one of the greatest dangers to us when it comes to being effective stewards of our time is failing to consciously, deliberately take charge of it and make decisions with our eyes open. And that's exactly what Paul is exhorting the Christians to do in Ephesians chapter 5. Look carefully how you walk. If you're up for this, I'll challenge you to it. If you have the courage, I would challenge you to make a little log for 14 days, 2 weeks. And you break that log up into maybe 15 minutes or 30 minute intervals, and you log how you are actually spending your time. Now, if I ask you to do that just as an exercise here to do it, I can almost guarantee you one thing. What you think you're spending your time on and what you will find after 14 days of historical data you are actually spending your time on will bear very little resemblance to one another. But if you're prepared to do it, make a log for 14 days of exactly how you are investing your time. And then sit down and look at it. Analyze that list. That's what the psalmist says in Psalm 90. Teach me to number my days that I may apply my heart unto wisdom. Sit down and take a look at that list. And then ask yourself, how should I be spending my time? What are the highest and best uses of my time? Most of us fill our days by simply the demands, right? We get up and there's things that have to get done. There's things we got to do. There's things and the day rushes by. And finally, at whatever time at night, we crash back on the pillow. We fall back asleep and wake up exhausted the next morning to just do it all again. And behind the scenes, there's some little hidden hand that just cranks up the speed and then laughs at us as we blunder and flounder our way along. That might be what 14 days of a journal will show you. Now, this is not a time management seminar for business purposes. This is intended to be a scriptural challenge to our hearts about how we are investing our lives for God. What is the best use of my time? Well, especially for young Christians, the first thing that you're likely to say is, well, I have to start doing more for God. I want you to stop right there and realize that the highest and best use of my time is not time that is spent for God. Just give that a moment to sink in. The highest and best use of my time, the most important thing I can do with my time, is not time that I am trying to do things for God. The most critical use and the most valuable use and the most precious use of time for a person to have on this planet is time spent with God. And that is, I think, where perhaps my generation and the generation below mine has most badly got off the rails. We have relegated our relationship with God to something that we think we can just sort of do on the fly. So I can download a quick little blurb in the morning onto my iPod, or I can have three or four little things that automatically pop up in my iPhone or my BlackBerry. And as I'm getting started in my busy day with all the things that I want to do, I can multitask. And while I'm multitasking, I just try to get some little thing spiritual that will see me through the day. I want to speak reverently. God is not relegated to a little compartment of my life that I can multitask while I check the headlines for the day. He is the Lord. And I am His. And what He cherishes most in my life is not what I can somehow put together and bring to Him and say, look at that, I did it all. What He cherishes most in my life is my heart. And there is no substitute for time spent with God. First thing in the morning, last thing at night, I can't dictate to you when that should be. But I will tell you this, if you as a young believer do not have a time, a specific time that is set aside and blocked out when all distractions are turned off, when the BlackBerry is switched off and set aside and there's no interruptions and the computer's off and the television's off and there's no sensory stimulation at all, just you and the Lord and His Word and your heart and His presence, you will know nothing but barren, fruitless, frustrating Christian living. Now, is that harsh? It's not meant to be harsh, but it is meant to be honest. God is not one more little voice out there crying for attention in all of the noise and commotion of the information age. If that's all He is, will never amount to anything, trying to live for Him as His people. So the first and most critical use of my time is time, non-negotiable time, spent with God. Now you say, well, that's so hard. No, it isn't. It really isn't. Honestly, it's not. The devil makes you think it's very hard. There are things that we will not go without doing. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because it might be quite embarrassing. But how many people here today did not brush their teeth this morning? Now, I hope that most did. I'm not going to do a breath test, but hopefully most of us wouldn't think of starting out in the day without brushing our teeth. Try to drill it into my young son, but how many today had a shower? Again, I think most, hopefully. You say, well, of course, I mean, that's obvious. It would be socially suicidal to, you know, go out there and start trying to mingle and function in life without some of these really basic necessities, right? Spiritually, it's exactly the same. What makes us think that we can somehow just roll out of bed, shower, shave, brush our teeth, rush out and face our day, and we know nothing of the presence of God? The most critical use of our time is time spent with God. So if you've got your 14-day journal, and you've looked at the way you've actually spent your time, and now you're prepared to make changes and you want to make sound decisions, the first thing you do, take a look at your lifestyle, and wherever, however you have to do it, you carve out little chunks of time on a regular, scheduled, non-negotiable basis that you are going to spend without distraction with God. The second thing you do is then you look at time spent for God. And of course, that's also time with God because He's with us as we serve Him. But you start looking then at ways that you should spend your life with God. Assembly meetings and assembly responsibilities. Why is it that they are always the first things to drop off from a busy life? Job demands have gotten too much. I had a course I had to take. I got a lot of homework. I've got a lot of things I got to do. The first thing that falls off our busy lives is getting to the meetings of the assembly and pouring our hearts into assembly life and fellowshipping with other Christians and being used to meet their needs. That's the first thing that goes. Should be the last thing to go. We should build our lives. We should put the building blocks of time together deliberately, carefully, making the best use of our time. Time spent with God, first priority. Time spent for God. Meetings of the assembly, serving other Christians, reaching out in the gospel, trying to be a witness to the people that He brings me in contact with. You start building a life for that. And you know what you'll find? If you look at a blank 14-day schedule and you start filling in some of these blocks, time I'm going to spend with God, meetings of the assembly, things that I know the Lord would have me to do. And then, of course, you have to overlay the inevitable secular responsibilities. Don't try calling into work and telling them you can't come in today. You're going to have to go into work. If you're a parent, you're going to have to raise your family. There's things you're going to have to do. But you know what you will find? There's a lot of things that were on your historical 14-day list that when you try to rebuild blocks of time, there's just not going to be any more room for them. Those are the things that you have allowed, and I have allowed, to take over our lives and suffocate us. And if we started to rebuild, making solid decisions about our time, some of those things are going to have to fall away. The real challenge I'll put to your heart and to my own is, are we prepared to do that? Are we prepared to look carefully how we walk, making the best use of our time? I'll end with this. I hear younger people say this an awful lot, including my own kids and the young folks in Langstaff. They'll engage in a certain activity or they'll squander a lot of time doing something or other, and then their justification of it will be this. Well, there's a lot worse things we could be doing. Have you ever justified your activities by saying that? There's a lot worse things we could be doing. That's why I love that translation of Ephesians chapter 5. Of course there's a lot of worse things you could be doing. I mean, how ludicrous is that? That's a certain recipe for mediocrity. You could be an axe murderer, right? That would be worse. I mean, you will always find worse things that you could be doing. And if you seek to justify what you are doing by saying, well, there's worse things, not only will it be a sort of a futile way to live, what I'd like to challenge your mind with today is it would be an unscriptural way to live. God does not want us to not make the worst use of our time. God gives us the challenge to make the best use of our time. And it is my prayer that in the busy, busy lives that we all live, and I live in the same world, that we will learn what it is to give Him the authority that He legitimately has. Remember, stewardship involves responsibility for something that doesn't belong to me and accountability. I'm going to stand, I'm going to answer for my moments and my days and my time. May God help us to use them for Him.